You are listening to the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast, Episode 80, a timeline on and of your cell phone. So what is this ISP advertisement thing?
Yeah, so this is kind of crazy. There was this dude who was real brief story. There's this dude, he was a MBA getting, not his MBA, he's in a master's program working on getting his in computer science, and he went to his parents' house and opened up his
browser.
He opened up his MacBook Pro, went to check out the Apple Store, and there was an ad on the Apple Store, this big obnoxious H&R Block ad. And he was like,
Apple's,
what the heck is this?
Monetization?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what we get into?
Yeah, and he was like, what the heck is this? It's like super ugly. And so he immediately assumes that he got spyware on or adware on his computer somehow. He's like, shoot.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm this big time, I think I'm the coolest guy. I know everything about computers and I got a virus. So he decided to jump on over to his parents' computer, who were using Windows 7. And Windows 7, he goes to Bing, and Bing has got an AT&T ad the exact same size sitting on it. And he's like, what the heck? So he opens up his Android phone, goes to some other website. I think he goes to Yahoo, and Yahoo's got this same exact ad, same exact stuff, and he goes, okay, it is, he goes, you know, maybe we're all dumb enough to get viruses on one of our computers. He goes, but the idea of getting the same, a virus that affects all these web pages the same ways on three different operating systems as different as Android.
That's pretty impressive.
And he goes, so it's probably not a virus. So he immediately jumps the idea of, like, in his brain, it's so funny, he's like, dude, somebody hacked our router and I have a virus on the router. And he's like, at his parents' house. And this is such a computer science thing, like, way to look at the world. Cause it's like, you know, it's like crazy. The idea of, or it's a dumb idea. But it's like, if you're like right in the middle of like computer technology, you're like, somebody says, I got a virus on my router. You're like, that's stupid. Like, that's not even possible. That doesn't make any sense. But, and it's like, that's the sort of thing that, like, some complete tech neophyte would come up with. Like, it's probably a virus on your router. Until you get, like, smart enough to think about, how would I create a really clever virus? I know what I'll do. I'll put a virus on routers. it's like a legitimate concern for him. So he's like trying to figure out, like, where this extra code is coming from. Cause he's looking at it and what he realizes is it's a little chunk of Java that's popping into the websites
Putting
on. So he figures that it's just in that his router is just injecting everything. And what he does is when he on his Android phone, he turns off the Wi-Fi and it goes away. So he goes, well, obviously it's coming from the network. So he starts to trace the stuff to make sure it's coming from the router. And all of a sudden he realizes that that the information is actually it's actually coming from before the router. I'm not exactly clear how he figured this out, but he realized that it was popping through some other service. And so basically what's going on, the end conclusion was CMA Communications is the ISP, and basically what they're doing is when you send a request, the request, you know, they go, I want to go to target.com. Boom, it hits CMA. They go, okay, they give you the IP address with all the HTML. And as the HTML is coming back to you, they pass it all through a third-party server who just tacks on that little piece of code at the very bottom. And then it gets back to your home with that little piece of code that adds the ads. And so basically it's a monetization plan for CMA Communications. They can add ads to everything. And he was like horrified by this because he's like, you know, what the heck? You can't inject code into my web pages. Like, that would be like, okay, I'm going to use Brown in order to get my mail from, I'm sending mail somewhere, man, they like open up your package and like add ads into the package and close the package back up. Like, this is terrible. And not to mention the fact that,
or maybe it would be like you're watching a television program on Comcast and they interrupt it with a commercial.
Exactly. That'd be exactly how infuriating it would be. But they're embedding all this stuff. And you're like,
or as if there were like commercials on Hulu.
Right.
You know?
Oh my goodness. See, that is actually frustrating. But it's on one hand, it's kind of clever. On one hand, it's kind of clever way of doing it, adding commercials to it. On the other hand, it's like obscene.
I remember the days when commercials were only 15 and 30 seconds long.
On Hulu?
Oh, those were the good days.
Yeah.
Yep. On Hulu.
See, I don't use
and
Hulu.
And they
for
couldn't
that
get around the ad block either, so it was just a blank screen for 15 and 30
That's
seconds.
Right. That was the best.
I remember those
back
days.
Back in
those
the
were
day.
The good days. And now it's like 120 seconds of real commercials.
Right. Yeah. So this
guy. I don't even know how long like regular TV is, but I feel like it's getting there.
Yeah, I think it is 102 minutes. That sounds about right. But this is, I don't know, this is interesting. This is an interesting new, like, new attack system. And the other thing you brought up is, like, he goes, you know, you can, like, let's say you go to hrblock.com to file your taxes. You know, CMA or your different providers, they know that you're going to H&R Block. They could totally make contracts with TurboTax so that as you go to H&R, it pops up an ad on H&R Block saying, why not try TurboTax? Will you charge 10% less?
I feel like this is a massive breach of privacy.
Yeah, that's kind of what everybody's talking about. Like, this is, like, horrifying, you know, privacy-wise, especially since you didn't sign up for this. You know, it just is happening now. But it's,
well,
like,
I mean,
this
you
is
probably did technically check a box somewhere, but you had no clue.
Right. Right,
what's
that's
going
the point.
On.
You signed up for the service, but the other thing they're talking about is like, what happens if you go to like, let's say you go to what's a good example? Somebody that has, you know, products that they're advertising, but you know, once you like all right now, all they're doing is injecting this little piece of code. But why can't they go in and say like, let's say you're on Target.com and you want to buy pants and Levi or let's because they don't sell Levi's at Target. So you're at Macy's.com and you want to buy some Levi khakis and Dockers doesn't think that's cool. This is a terrible example too because Levi owns Dockers.
Owns Dockers.
Yeah. but the idea being that a competitive
yeah,
pants
just go with the idea.
Could go with one of these companies and say, anytime somebody goes to Macy's.com, I want you to remove all references to Levi's and just put links to our pants instead. You know, and all of a sudden,
or it's like Target.com forwards to Walmart.
Exactly. It's like, it's, I mean, I don't think nobody's that courageous yet, but why not? As an ISP, why, like, what agreements do you have that you're going to send me to the
just
right?
404 air, try these other retailers.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah. Google.com is down right now. Maybe you should try Bing. You know, but it's like, this goes back to that whole idea of, like, you know, of websites that are, you know, this whole idea you know, that has been pitched a couple of times where you'd have different, you know, different packages will allow you to go to different parts of the internet as though it were cable packages. But, you know, from an ad perspective, why can't companies do that? What's stopping them? What's, you know, other than this sort of unspoken agreement that when you type in Google.com, it'll bring up Google.com, or when you go to Target/Dockers, it'll send you to the Dockers page at Target. Once again, a bad example since they don't sell Dockers. But you know, why don't ISPs get into this game?
I think they want to.
They
and like I said, I think there's some massive, massive privacy concerns that I think will actually erode over time. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Facebook would love to have that kind of data too, and. And I mean, and you could see something like that, right? Where they totally team up with, it could be like Facebook, and Facebook be the weird one to do it, where, you know, they're just tracking everything. And if you as a consumer or a user, you know, opt in to share that information, okay, cool, no big deal. But yeah. This is clearly not opting in. I mean, you know, this guy, he didn't opt in to ask for this. Parents, I guess, Charlie technically did. I just, you know, and I suppose if all it is a random ad that, you know, and all they're doing is tracking clicks, I don't know, man.
Yeah, this whole thing is, it's a fascinating, like, new wrinkle in this whole debate. Because, I mean, this isn't going to make...
Well, I bet web developers aren't super pumped about that either.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's like
they
Apple...
They don't get a say in the page.
Apple is, you know, and it's funny, all the recommendations that people have made is, you know who we need to complain is, you need to complain to Apple. You need to go to Apple and say, look, whenever I go to your website, somebody else is injecting ads onto your webpage. Because Apple has the money and finances to and the lawyers to say, maybe you should stop messing with our code as it passes to our consumers. But, you know, smaller webpages, I could see stuff like where, you know, our page would have ads added to it, and we don't have any ads because we like you people and we think ads are ugly and we haven't figured out how to make a lot of money off of it yet. But trust me, as soon as we do, we'll have ads. but it's, you know, at this point we don't have any ads, and I'm sure if he were to go to our webpage from his parents' house, it'd show up with ads all of a sudden, and you sit there and you go, like, you just shrug your shoulders and I don't know. It's frustrating as a developer, as an ad, because, you know, especially since companies like Google is an ad company, Facebook is an ad company, like, they can't be pumped about this idea, you know. Especially the idea of this so far is just, you know, it's not editing code yet, except they are placing their ad on top of everything else. Wow. It floats on top of everything else. You know, it is your forwardmost element.
Interesting question, right? Is that editing code when it changes what you see? I mean, that sure sounds like it to me. Yeah, sure. Yeah. The text may not be changed, but the intent is definitely changed.
Right, and you could
easily add... Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I bet that there are tons... I don't know. There's probably tons of families out there and households that have this and don't know any better. And, man, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be signing up for them anytime soon.
Yeah.
Not to mention it slows my browser down. Come on.
Yeah, it's messed up. That's the worst part. But I don't know.
And it sounds like AdBlock doesn't work, because maybe it does.
I think AdBlock would work. I think AdBlock would work because it's just Java.
Interesting.
And AdBlock works post receiving the HTML. It scrubs the HTML once it gets to you. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know. Cool. So. Let's talk about some world-changing phones.
Oh, yeah. So this week, oh, man, this is a big week. This was a big – oh, no. Was that last week? When did the cell phone turn old?
I don't know.
It was the 30 years old. It was April 3rd, 1973, which was Wednesday. Oh, baby. So the cell phone, turned old, 30, older than me.
Good old Motorola,
Yeah, and it all started with the Motorola where yeah, now you guys got to check this out. So this is an interesting article. This is actually a really fascinating article because they said these are the 12 cell phones that changed our world forever. And so it starts out with the Motorola Dynext 8000X, which was the first cell phone ever made. It definitely changed stuff because
it's that classic brick where it's got the 9 key on top. And this was a cell phone, not a car phone, correct?
Right. Correct.
This is like the Zach Morris phone right here.
Right. Actually, yeah, it's exactly. And they were wicked expensive early on, but they were, you know, cell phones, and they worked in tiny little areas because and it pioneered the idea of the cellular network.
That is so awesome.
I know. So that obviously is a phone that changed how we use cell phones since it invented them. The next came up the Motorola Micro Tac, which was 1989. It was a flip phone factor. It was like the first one.
I feel like our mom had a version of this.
Me too, but I don't really remember. I feel like our family has had one for sure, though. It was a mere 12.3 ounces. For the sake of comparison, the Galaxy Note 2 is just shy of 6 inches long and 6.4 ounces, so it was still very heavy. But it had a lot of amazing features, including security codes, currency calculators, hand-free operation, and perhaps most conveniently, a phone book to store names and numbers. It was the beginning of the end of having to actually remember anyone's numbers. So that was kind of a big deal because it started to use more of the microprocessors. It wasn't just a walkie-talkie with a code for dialing specific phone numbers. Next came up the Nokia 320 in 1990. This is one of the first big Nokia phones.
Like this.
Yes, I believe you did. This was that, like, the classic Nokia brick. This was the thing that, like, this was a huge selling phone worldwide, and it was, for a lot of people, it was their first cell phone. It added a lot of cool features, but they call it the Great Way Drug to Phones. And then they move on to the Sony Ericsson.
I would have had Snake on it for the first time.
I know. Oh. I remember, dude, I remember playing Snake on that all the time. All the time.
And you thought Angry Birds was silly.
yeah, seriously. Sony Ericsson T68i in 2002. This is the bridge phone, it's the bridge between dumb phones and smartphones. Could be argued that the most awesome cell phone ever. It had Bluetooth, two-way MMS, simple WAP browsing and email, and a colored screen. So this was like your first super early version of what would be, you know, where you're moving away from just the cell phone with the ability to do things that kind of implement the cell phone to really a wider device that's capable of different forms of communication. Then there's the Danger Hip Hop Sidekick, which this is basically really? I don't even remember people having it, but they describe it as, this is basically the BlackBerry for kids. It had a full QWERTY keyboard. It had a 2.6 inch screen that just seemed huge at the time, color. But it was kind of your early smartphone-esque phones. And it was more feature rich in its, you know, actual color screen compared to the BlackBerries. But of course, the BlackBerry was a pretty big deal as your first like major stalwart smartphone, and that was in 2003. Yeah. The BlackBerry 6210 came out, and this is the BlackBerry that I think everybody recognizes as the CrackBerry. This is the one that really, you know, made a difference. Then you get the Trio 600 in 2003.
I wanted one of these.
I know you did.
And I almost bought one. Almost.
This is the one that really
came out with a phone.
Yeah, I know.
Which had better be on this list.
Oh, yeah, it is. So Palm, obviously, this is when they made the transition from the PDA to the phone, and it was kind of a big deal because it was basically a phone with a PDA, and texting and internet. So this is like your modern form factor of smartphones pre 2007, and it really set the high bar for what smartphones.
They sold that one for a ton of years.
Tons of years.
2.5-inch screen.
Oh, it's big. And then a year later, the Motorola Razr came out in 2004, which is really the very end of the idea of smaller.
Did you have
lighter.
That one?
I did. I had like three of them. I'm broke. And
that one was a very popular phone.
Oh, crazy popular. Sold an unbelievable amount. I think it was one of your, I don't know. The big thing here was how small it was, but it was, they describe it as this is the last dumb phone that truly mattered, which I think is why only reason to think it's important. And they come to the Motorola Roker, which it could play iTunes was its big innovation. It could work with iTunes. It could only play 100 songs, but it was a big deal because you're now moving into this, like, you're coming more and more into the idea of one step further away from it just being a phone. After that, you get the Nokia N95 in 2007, which I don't even know how this one made it onto, well, because it had a GPS, turn-by-turn navigation, 5 megapixels of camera, short video, a radio tuner. It had a bunch of different features, but nobody has any idea what it was, because a little bit later in 2007, same year, Steve Jobs walked on stage and talked about a new web browser, telephone, and text messaging machine that he was developing and called it the iPhone.
That's a great intro. This is the phone that changed everything.
Yeah. It basically took all this innovation and put it into a package that was like incredible. Oh my goodness. And then the last phone they come up with is the HTC Dream, which is really the first Android phone that showed what Android could be by comparison to the iPhone. And it makes sense that you would kind of add that into the list as they are selling that. As Android is outselling iPhones.
I don't know. I would have chosen that Android device per se, but.
Okay. Well, I understand why they picked it though. Cause it was the first one that wasn't a complete, dud of an operating system. And so I thought that was an interesting article talking about kind of how the innovation works. But one of the things that article completely ignores is the idea that cell phones have changed how the world works in a very appreciable way. And so that article was brought to you by Wired, and BGR came back with an article that just tears that Wired article apart. They're basically
really?
Like, oh yeah, it's great. And they're basically just raging about the fact that this is ridiculous. Number one, a bunch of these phones barely sold any phones. Like, yeah, sure, they had new features that people were excited about, but you can't just talk about like phones as, what new feature that it brought along and who got there first and how did it change things. Like, you really need to look at the overall impact of these phones. When they're talking about how Nokia has like 5 of their phones are the best-selling phones out that have ever been sold. And they didn't even pick the Nokia 320, which is the brick that everybody has, is not the best-selling Nokia phone ever. It's just the one that Americans had. They ragged on the Razr because it was just an evolutionary dead end. Well, Ward kind of pointed that out. they pointed out that the Sidekick and the Trail are each as influential as Nokia in the mobile phone history, since each of them given one slot out of 12. Yeah, so it's like, which are like, what the heck? The Nokia is like, this is obviously, this article is written from the bigger perspective of, like, how did this affect the world? And which is actually a really big conversation, because you think about it, it's like, in America, we have a completely different communication system than rural China, India, Africa. And so cell phones in those parts of the world have radically changed societies because it essentially allowed them to catch up with communications innovations of the last century in a matter of a few decades. And, you know, whereas it took us centuries to lay all the fiber optics and all the support telephone wires to do all of this, they build one fiber optic cable to one cell phone tower, and then they build a couple of repeaters all around, and then boom, everybody's got telephone service and internet connectivity. What the heck? It's like, it's incredible. And Nokia really has been incredibly influential in allowing that to happen. And one of the things they talk about, this one, just to pick just one example of a truly revolutionary model that reshaped the industry, let's look at the Nokia 1100. I was looking for the word, couldn't find it. This phone debuted in 2003 and went on to sell more than 200 million units. It was a landmark model because it packed a remarkable combination of functionality into a 93 gram phone that cost around $80. The 1100 featured 400 hours of standby time despite its tiny size, a huge important factor for households with spotty access to electricity. It offered advanced messaging features, ringtone composition, and games. This was a device that helped turn the mobile phone into the most important consumer electronic product in the world by making it affordable, extremely durable, and useful beyond voice calls. And so they basically get into like how, you know, the cell phones have changed the world in radically more, you know, and in some might argue more radically than computers have, because they've affected more people. You know, some would argue that cell phones are just little computers, but, but I don't know. It was an interesting juxtaposition of the two of, because one is focused oftentimes what we tend to focus on, or tech people tend to focus on, is like, oh, these are the cool innovations that have come out. And you forget about the actual impact that this has on people's lives and families and entire societies and how it changes the world. You know, these are the phones that have allowed the Arab Spring to happen. You know, these are the phones that have allowed, you know, India to become a world economic powerhouse, because, you know, communication and technology is incredibly of an incredible fundamental, you know, keystone to the whole game. And they've allowed them to accelerate into the future by not requiring wires. Pretty cool. Thought it was a fascinating couple of articles.
But. Yeah, definitely. And they're really just two different ways of defining change, but I understand.
One is better than the other, James.
Wired is referring to features, and, you know, BGR is talking about culture,
yeah,
and society. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
cool.
I thought BGR could have been a little...
create a complete picture.
Yeah. I thought BGR could have been a little less pretentious, but...
Well, that was the way that Wired wrote the title, right? That was
right.
12 telephones that have changed our world.
Right.
All right, guys. That's not what you meant.
Yeah.
Perhaps changed our lives. Well, yeah.
Well, not even. Changed the industry. I mean, but it's...
Yeah.
They were being a little bit over-enthusiastic about... the influence that the Sidekick had on the world.